Hi, everybody. This is Mel.
And this is Jill.
And this is Mel and Jill Geek Out. Hi, Jill.
Hi, Mel.
How's it going?
Not too bad. Not too bad.
Do anything fun this weekend?
Yeah. It's been another packed weekend, so just...
That's what you get for having children.
Yeah. It happens. One of these days I'm going to have a nice
extracurriculars.
Long... Yeah. One of these days I'm going to have a nice long weekend just to do nothing and just relax. Go to the spa.
I mean, Memorial Day is right around the corner.
Yeah. Who knows? I'm sure there's something scheduled already.
Fair. And I do feel like April has been both the longest and sometimes shortest month all at the same time.
I'm with you. I feel like it was just the other day that April 2nd was right around the corner. It's like, where did the whole month go?
Where'd a whole month go? But then I look at like my work life and I'm like, oh no, a lot has happened.
Oh yeah. It's been a long month.
Long month. So this weekend I watched a new documentary on Netflix called What Jennifer Did. And it's a true crime podcast or a true crime documentary.
Okay.
Do you want to know a little bit about it?
Sure.
Can I tease you into watching it? Wonderful. So it is a Canadian case, just FYI.
Okay.
And it is about a young girl. She's probably in her early to mid 20s at the oldest. She lives at home with her two parents. And one night between like 10:30, 11 o'clock at night, three men break into their home, tie her up to a banister, and take her parents downstairs, ask them for money when they don't have any money. They proceed to shoot them. The mother passes away, unfortunately, but the father does not. He's in a coma. And it opens with her 911 call.
She did it.
Spoiler alert, you're not entirely wrong.
Okay.
It is not.
Wait. Okay. To be fair, we did start this conversation outside of the recording studio. So before you get any further into telling me, I'm going to tell you what I thought when I watched that trailer. Girl did it by orchestrating some sort of person to come in and do it, most likely a boyfriend who the parents don't like. And yeah, I have a feeling you're going to tell me that I was pretty damn close.
You are close. You are not 100% correct.
Okay. Okay.
So we find out that Jennifer, the daughter, so she is the daughter of two Vietnamese immigrants. And she's had, you know, maybe not the most fun life. They have obviously very high expectations. This is a pretty normal thing in those kinds of cultures to really want their children to be successful. They interview one of her friends and he says, like, yeah, everybody in our high school was either going to be an engineer, a doctor, a dentist, or something along those lines. Like,
I feel like that's how my high school was.
Everybody was doing that. Yeah. And she was not an A student. She struggled a little bit in school. So she was not doing well. And she talked in one of her police interviews, she talks about how she wanted to go to school for kinesiology, but her parents were not supportive of that. Her dad wanted her to be a pharmacist. So she proceeds to pretend for 4 years that she is going to college.
Uh-oh. Time's up.
And they eventually find out, obviously, that she is lying about this. We're going to couple that with her not having the best boyfriend. Her boyfriend is a pot dealer.
Okay.
Who works at a pizza joint. And so her father does not approve of him at all.
So far, I'm doing great.
She has a pretty deep attachment to him. She mentions that when they were on like a European trip during high school, that he helped her out when her asthma had acted up. And so she just really felt, you could tell that this girl really liked this guy. But after the ultimatum from her parents, which was worded, you either will continue with us or you'll be with him over my dead body.
Oh, okay.
Not a great choice of words.
No.
She and the boyfriend broke up and he has a new girlfriend now, but they still talk. We find out that they have both been receiving weird kind of threatening messages from an anonymous number, like a private number.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. We also find out that she is just like whenever her interviews come on, she is clearly like very distraught, very nervous, very uncomfortable. So the interesting thing that they do in this, which is the thing that threw me off, is like American police are allowed to lie to you.
Yeah.
But they usually keep their lies pretty plausible. Not in Canada, apparently. They send in this new detective to talk to her. And he explains to her that satellites work just like what you see on TV. And they can zoom in on your house and they can see like x-ray vision into your house of like how many people are in. So if I had been there, I wouldn't have murdered my parents, but like, it's fine. But B, I'd been like, I know this is bullshit.
Yeah.
But good try.
I want my lawyer.
Oh my God. This girl was interviewed 3 times, never once asked for a lawyer. I don't know Canadian laws. I don't know if she's entitled to a lawyer. I don't know how this works.
That's fair.
Okay. My other thing is the police wait an astronomical amount of time to subpoena the phone records. Like as soon as they knew that there was these weird messages going on, I would have subpoenaed the phone records immediately. I would have solved the case sooner.
Okay.
Okay. Let's just say I would have solved the case on day 5. They didn't solve the case until like day 30.
I mean, we do have the benefit of editing, so.
I would have solved the case based on the evidence provided in said documentary on day 5 because I would have subpoenaed the phone records after her second interview.
What if they subpoenaed the phone records, but they didn't come in until day like 30?
Oh, no, that is not what they said.
Oh, Lord. Okay.
So they talk to the ex-boyfriend. He's like, I don't deal drugs anymore. I got caught that one time and I'm done. He tells them about how he's getting these weird messages, too. So it's both him and Jennifer who are getting the weird messages.
What you want to bet and she's so, not getting the messages?
Oh, no, she is. They're on her phone. Okay. You can see that she's getting them. So they bring her in again with dude who tells her the incredibly tall tale about satellites.
Right.
I'm sorry. My dog sees literally nothing, but won't shut up. So they bring her in. They're talking to her. They're like, we know that there was more movement in the house than what you're telling us. All these things. And they also say that he's like trained in like truth verification, which is also, by the way, total bullshit.
People are stupid.
Total bullshit. So she eventually confesses to hiring this guy, Homeboy. That is what she knows about him. His name is Homeboy.
Oh my God.
to kidnap her and kill her. But something went wrong and he killed her parents.
Do we believe this?
It's hard to say. She has not changed her story since she got to that version.
I don't buy it.
She's clearly, like, in the documentary shown to be very depressed. Like, after her parents found out she was lying about going to school, they essentially put her on, like, permanent lockdown. She could not go anywhere that they didn't drive her to. She pretty much could go to piano lessons and nothing else.
Gotcha.
So, like, they took her phone away from her. Like, she really had nothing. And I definitely think she was depressed. I think she was really into the boyfriend. Boyfriend had a new girlfriend. I think it's plausible that she was going to do some kind of weird suicide by hitman, but that seems like an expensive solution to your problem.
Definitely.
Because it cost her, like, she says it cost like $2,000.
Well, that's...
But here's the thing. They only bring in P.S. It's after the third interview when she confesses that they fucking subpoena the phone records.
Seriously?
Seriously. The only reason they continue down this path is because the dad, who had been in a coma, wakes up.
Okay.
And his first thing he says to the detectives who go visit him is, "What did Jennifer do?"
Okay.
And they're like, they get him to explain the scene. Obviously, his story's a little different than hers.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're like, "Well, tell us how Jennifer was involved." And he's like, "Use your detective skills to figure that out."
What?
Yep.
What?
Yep.
Why?
That is a great question.
Okay.
So, yeah, it concludes with saying that she was convicted, her, the boyfriend, and the three people who were hired to commit the crime all got convicted. But then they all had a successful appeal and are having a retrial.
Interesting.
So my guess is Mr. Tall Tales About Satellites wasn't actually admissible.
Maybe. Maybe.
Because how could that be fucking admissible? That's coercion.
Laws are different.
I know. I don't know anything about Canadian justice system, but in the United States, like, yeah, the police can lie to you. They can lie about, like, if they are police, and to a certain extent, they can lie to you. They can't lie like that.
I mean, they kind of do. Not
to that extent.
I mean, I haven't heard of it like that, but, like, they, I mean, telling them,
they do,
like,
lie.
Yeah, because they're like, "Oh, so-and-so confessed. Now it's your turn." Like, that's not, like, you could argue the same thing. We're not going to get down this. We're not going to go down this road. I'm stopping. No.
Yes. This is why criminal defense attorneys exist.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, it was an interesting documentary. I do recommend a watch. I did leave some bits out, but
I still called it.
I mean, in a technical sense, yes, she did it. She did not hold the gun.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. But she was, like, the one. It wouldn't have happened without her. She was the...
She was a player in the game, for sure.
Yeah. She may not have pulled the trigger, but it wouldn't have been there had she not. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's why she got sentenced to, like, life plus a gajillion years in prison. So.
Maybe. Might get overturned.
We'll see how the appeal goes. Yeah. I wonder if they'll do an update.
Probably, depending on how long it takes, I guess.
Yeah. Court cases take forever.
Yes, they do.
Forever. It's insane.
Like, I listened to... Oh, God, what was it called? I can't... Serial. The Serial podcast. Mm-hmm. That was, like, the first podcast I ever listened to, and I followed that shit for years. I listened to Rabia's podcast. The undisclosed. So, yeah.
Yeah. It's insane how long court cases can take. Mm-hmm. Even when they're like signed, sealed, delivered, like perfect slam dunk of cases, still take forever.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do we want to jump into today's subject?
I think so, yes.
So we are coming after a brief hiatus for life. We are finally coming back to Iron Flame today. We're going to pick up at chapter 43, and it's going to be interesting. It's going to be brief, but it's going to be interesting. So if we last recall, we left off in the, oh my gosh, the other place that they had to go to with Takaris and his luminary and all that nonsense. And he made some promise to take the cadet flyers back to Erasia with them. And the only way for the flyers and the griffins to get there is to walk up this like super sketchy cliff with a bunch of like booby traps. So that's where we open up. It is 4 days later. The luminary is in Erasia getting set up in the forages, and the riders and the griffins are at the base of the Cliffs of Draelor, aka Sketchy AF Cliffs, and they are getting ready to start the ascent. And, you know, it's going to take them like 12 hours to get up this gigantic cliff, and it's full of booby traps, and it's bad. It's going to be an unfun experience, because not only all of that, but griffins and flyers are not used to the same altitudes that the riders and the dragons are. So they're going to get up to close to the top of this, and they're going to get like altitude sickness. And it's going to be shitty. Like, can one of the wind makers just like become an oxygen mask producer for people?
I don't think it works that way.
It'd be really cool if it did.
Yeah.
Like, really cool. So they start their climb, and the griffins are walking with the groups, and the dragons are like flying around patrolling. And unsurprising, Violet's squad is paired with Cat's Drift.
Of course.
Of course. But Rhiannon takes one for the team and pairs up with Cat because she's pretty confident Cat would just yeet Violet off a cliff.
Probably.
I wouldn't recommend that to Kat. That sounds like a good way to become a snack for Tarn, but
oh yeah, but
not a great idea. So as they're climbing though, something interesting happens. I swear I only have 6 sticky notes this time. It's gonna be fast, guys. Tarn comes into her mind and says, Erasia's first hatchling has chosen to emerge. And she's like, oh, we have a hatchling? Like, oh, yay. And he's like, the hatchling's choice transforms the valley back into a hatching ground. It changes the magic. Every channeling creature within a 4-hour flight of the valley will know. I don't know why, but no one takes this as a warning.
Yeah. They all very much is like, okay, cool. Thanks for the tad bit of info.
Yay.
Yeah.
We have a new baby dragon.
Yeah. They're not remotely concerned about it.
They're like, oh, well, we're in like 3 hours of it. So what else could possibly know? And I'm like, a lot of shit.
A lot of things.
A lot of fucking shit. A lot of fucking shit. So, yeah. That's so fun. So fun. So, as they're getting to the top. So, Violet is paired with Marin, who happens to be Kat's best friend. Because, you know, of course she is. But Marin and Violet actually, like, kind of get along.
Mm-hmm.
They're pretty chummy with each other. So maybe this will work out, but also maybe you know, Violet's just seeing if fucking around would be fun and whether or not she'll find out later.
We'll see.
We'll see. So they're almost to the top. They have about an hour left of the ascent, and the altitude really starts affecting the flyers and the griffins. Like, it's not going well. And they come up to this spot, and we hear Dane yelling, "Yay, more Dane."
Motherfucking Dane.
So over him. Oh, I fucking hate Dane. So Dane has come up to this one booby trap, and they can't, like, trigger it, or they can't do anything about it because they know if they hit this, like, 6-foot-long pressure point, it will shoot arrows, but they have no idea from where. So they can't risk setting it off.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody has to use their Chevrolet legs and jump over this 6-foot pressure point, which is all great and good if you're not, you know, 5 feet tall and negative 5 pounds like Violet and this flyer Luella are.
Not going to be good.
It's not great. So Violet being Violet, it's like, cool, we'll just make gauntlet modifications. So she has Riddick, you know, Spider-Man crawl over to this one slot she saw and hammer a short sword into it,
mm-hmm,
so that she could reach up, grab it, and swing herself across to the other side. So Violet does it first to show Luella, what the hell her plan is here.
Mm-hmm.
So Violet makes it across. It doesn't feel great. She makes it across. So then Luella tries. And Luella doesn't do a great job.
No, she does not.
She, instead of, you know, rolling towards her griffin, who went across already, she rolls at Violet and takes almost herself and Violet, but herself, Vizia, and Violet, almost all three fall off the cliff. But Violet gets caught back by Riddick. Well, Violet is trying to hold on to Vizia and Luella, who have fallen over the cliff, but she has them. So, not great.
No.
So the griffin comes over and plucks Vizia up because he can't get to Luella with Vizia in the way. So just as he goes to grab Luella, though, the arrows are triggered thanks to Luella's shitty dive. And Riddick gets shot twice.
Oh, God.
Which brings us to chapter 44, which then, you know, continues into the so much fun of this couple of chapters. So in that moment of people seeing that Riddick has been shot, like, that moment of pause is just enough time for Luella to lose her grip and fall to her death.
That sucks.
I don't care about Luella. She's described as, like, the nicest of them and a great baker, but I'm like, I don't give a shit about this death.
Yeah. I mean, it's not going to go over very well, but
it doesn't.
Yeah.
It goes over very badly.
Yeah.
It is a bad time for everyone involved, but it works out. It doesn't work out, but, you know, we have to move forward. So Violet freaks the fuck out, screams for Brennan, who comes. I don't know how he hears her, but he comes a running. I'm assuming the dragons,
yeah,
conveyed the message for her. Because Riddick is shot twice in the abdomen.
It's not no bueno.
With a couple arrows. He's gonna die if the mender doesn't come. So she has Dane pop her shoulder back into the socket, because that happened. That's one of the many super fun injuries she's had, and she rushes to help Riddick, and then Brennan gets there pretty quickly, does the same. So in the midst of all of this, of trying to help Riddick,
Luella's griffin is dying because it's the same kind of situation where if the dragon dies, the rider dies. Same thing for griffins. If the flyer dies, the griffin dies. So fun, right?
Oh yeah. Super fun.
So as the griffin lay dying, it doesn't get to have a super peaceful death because a wyvern snatches it off of the cliff.
Eats a light snack.
A nice little snack.
Yeah, snack. Eats a light snack.
Nom, nom, nom. So this is a problem for a lot of reasons, because there's also, like, at the point that they're at in the ascent, there's pretty dense fog. This is why they couldn't see the wyvern. It's sketchy. So now everyone's freaking the fuck out. Everybody who can runs the fuck up the hill. Taryn comes down and scoops up Violet. Like, you kind of are our only hope right now, because we can't see the wyverns. We don't know if there's any venom with them. It's a problem.
Yeah, it's gonna come back to bite her.
My thinking is, why, when the hatchling thing happened, did anybody think that this could possibly have happened?
I don't know.
The lack of forethought.
Yeah.
Is astounding.
It really would have sent little alarm bells off of my brain.
I've been like, I would have been like, Taryn, could a venin or a wyvern who act like little insect hive mind things, could they have heard or felt this shift? And he probably been like, yeah. And she's like, should we be worried about that? And he probably been like,
yeah.
And I'd be like, what are we going to do about this, Willis?
it was a very missed opportunity there, I guess.
They're going to all die in actual war because they're really bad at, like, anticipating conflict.
They're all stupid fucking teenagers. I mean, the dragons aren't. Taryn should have said something.
They're not teenagers, though. They're in their early 20s.
Yeah, they're almost as stupid as teenagers.
They're not great.
I mean,
sometimes they read like they're 16, though.
Yes, I was going to say, we have spent nearly two books complaining about how whiny Violet's being instead of just talking to Zayden like a big girl.
So annoying.
So annoying. She's a fucking teenager.
She sure as fuck acts like one, even if she's like 23 something. Or something like
that.
Yeah. So they first try to get somebody with like wind power as their signet, as a to like blow the fog away, but they're not powerful enough to do it. And there's not enough people with the right kinds of signets to get rid of the fog. Yeah. So Violet jumps onto Taryn and asks him to get them to pull the fog away from the cliff where like everybody's walking, because let's be honest, Violet has yet to master any amount of aim, and it's not like she can fucking see through the fog anyway.
No, she's just throwing shit out there, seeing where it sticks.
Yeah, so this is the brief glimpse of the plan that Violet gets. Oh, wait, I lied. We're not going to read this part yet. We're going to get to the end. And then this is her explanation of what her thought process was.
Jump in the gun.
We'll get there. I'm sorry. So they get they don't know how many wyverns there are. They get two of them to start following them. And Taryn's doing some like crazy maneuvering, which other people who didn't have a saddle like Miss Violet has wouldn't be able to keep their seat for. So plus 1 point for the saddle.
I feel like this is common sense. Like, why wouldn't you have a saddle? Like a human on such a large creature?
The dragons won't tolerate it, but Taryn is cool and he will.
That's fair.
Cool is the operative word.
I was going to say relative.
He'll tolerate things for Violet and no one else. So she has this plan, thanks to actually having a halfway decent teacher for a second. She and Taryn fly up above the clouds, and then she, for the first time ever, pushes lightning down and creates like a thunderstorm in these clouds, which electrocutes all of the wyvern, which there was four, in there and kills them.
What about, because aren't the other dragons flying around as well?
Yeah, but they're either above or below the clouds. They're not in the clouds.
Okay. I remember reading that. I had difficulty with these scenes. Like, I have a really difficult time picturing battles in my head. I don't know why.
Yes, it is. This is, I only fully understood it on the reread.
Gotcha.
And I was like, oh, I get it now.
Yeah, I was very confused with Violet and Luella. I was like, what the fuck is going on here? Something similar to the gauntlet or the parapet or what the fuck ever.
Yeah. The only way we really figured it out in my head was through the reread. It was like when you're reading it the first time, you're there for the plot mostly.
Yeah.
And like all this other nonsense that goes on is just confusing. Yeah.
I'll get to the details later.
So they fly down, double check that there's no riders on any of these venin, and they are not venin, these wyverns, that there is no venin with them, and making sure they're dead. They are, in fact, dead. So then she comes up, she's talking to Brennan, and he's like, how did you know you could kill them like that? Electrifying the...
Well, no shit, stuff. Sherlock.
So this is her explanation. I didn't. Wyvern are created with dark wielder magic, and Felix said something to me about energy fields the other day. I took a chance that the lightning would be drawn to their magic, and Taryn agreed to try. I feel like that was really fucking obvious.
Yeah. I mean... That wouldn't have been the reasoning that I would have picked. If I'm being honest, I would just be like, I can make fucking lightning, so I'll put it in the fucking clouds. Like,
yeah.
It doesn't have to be much more deep than that. But I mean, if we want to go that route, then sure.
Yeah. Like, the wyverns are created of things that take power that they shouldn't, and so power will seek them out.
Yeah.
Like, it makes sense, but I'm like, also, did you take like an elementary level, like, weather class? This is
very basic meteorology, people who fly, you would think that they would have a clue about. So,
like, don't fly into the lightning storm.
Yeah.
Unless you really want to get roasted. But apparently not. Apparently, in Erasia, in Tirindor, in Nevaeh, this is just not common logic. It's not common sense. Not common sense. I don't understand. So they get to the top and, you know, they all discuss it like, okay, The Venin probably know some shit and sent the wyverns because, like, the whole hatchling situation. I'm like, no shit.
They're testing your defenses. They're seeing what you can take. They're trying to figure out what's up. Like,
new magic.
Yeah.
And they're like, yay, I'm thirsty. Let me have some of that.
Yeah, it's like, let's go figure out what's up and if we can get more.
100%. I'm like, how are you guys this dumb? How are you this dumb?
I'm going to say something that goes along those lines. It's like, you are all terrible at war. No wonder you have found your all self subjugated. Like, what the fuck?
You're real bad at it. Like, so bad at it. I don't understand.
Nobody's using context clues. Like, oh, I know that they're not reading anything, but none of them are using context clues.
Not a single one.
Look around. Oh my God. It's so frustrating.
So frustrating.
Sorry. Let's continue.
It's okay. So this brings us to chapter 45. And I'm going to read the snippet at the beginning of the chapter for you. It was only in the last 50 years that we realized there were no longer solely coming from the Barrens. They'd begun to take recruits, teaching those who never bonded a griffin to channel what was not theirs to take, to upset the balance of magic by stealing it from the very source. The problem with mankind is we too often find our souls to be a fair price for power. Let me read that last sentence again because I stumbled on my words. The problem with mankind is we too often find our souls to be a fair price for power. And this is from Captain Lyra Dorrell's Guide to Vanquishing the Venom, property of Cliffbane's Academy.
Well, I think it's that last little sentence is wisdom for Iron Flame as well as the rest of the world. Like, that's good advice in real life, not just the book.
Yeah, like, don't sell your soul for more power.
Yeah.
In general.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, it's a vibe.
I feel like you're looking for something.
My sticky note came off, and I'm trying to put it back on. Okay, don't judge me.
Cliffsbane Academy. Restored. What is that?
That's where the Griffin flyers were training and got taken over by the Venom.
Gotcha.
So that brings us into chapter 45, which has such a delightful beginning.
Yeah.
To it, with the death rolls being read, and it has taken a morbid as hell turn, because now the names aren't just, you know, potential squad mates, kind of people at your school that you may not interact with anymore as much. These are actually people's family members.
Oh yeah, this is a very sobering death scrolls call.
Mm-hmm. But we see a big divide between flyers and writers in this, where the writers have been taught to just not react to a loved one's name being read or somebody they care about's name being read. The flyers have like visceral, visible reactions. They cry out, they cry, they have like a normal grief response.
Yeah.
And so it makes Violet think about, because we get a little bit of a story during the ascent up the cliffs of whatever about the difference. I don't care about the
I don't either
location names. I don't care. Where they talk about the differences between Basgaiath and where the flyers were training in Cliffsbane, where if a flyer fails to bond with a griffin, they just join a different part of the
They don't die
part of the army. They just become infantry or something else. They don't get Merkler like they do in Basgaiath. No, they're like,
they don't die.
You literally kill people on day one.
Yeah.
Like, WTF. They're like, I don't understand the brutality.
You look at me but wrong, also you die.
Yeah, like, it is not that at all. Like, they have to, like, essentially cliff dive off a cliff onto the back of a griffin as their, like, initiation. And, like, if you fall into the water below, you just like are fine. You just swim to the shores.
Is that what was going on?
Yeah, that's what they described. You have to jump from a cliff onto like the back of a
griffin.
I did
not get that.
Yeah.
I was definitely picked. I could not understand why this was such a big deal. I was like, they're on the fucking griffin. Like, what?
They're not on the griffin.
It makes more sense now. I'm like, what? I'm like, why are they acting like this is such a big deal? But yeah, if I'm diving off a fucking cliff and I have to land on the griffin, yeah, yeah, it's a big deal.
It's not easy.
No.
But also, like, just standing there can get you barbecued by a dragon.
Yes.
So, you know, neither is easy. Neither is easy. So it's interesting. So the one moment of like mild truce between Kat and Violet is during the Death Scroll readings every day, because they both look at each other every day at the end, acknowledging that neither one heard their sister's name. Kat did not, or Violet didn't hear Mira, and Kat did not hear Serene.
Y'all should have seen my faces just a second ago, because I definitely misread that bullet point. And I was like, what the fuck did I miss? There's no way I missed this.
This is like they get like 10 seconds of I'm not gonna murder fuck you the first chance I get, and it's during the end of
I know
the death roll.
The way I read it, like your bullet point was that they heard Mira's name and not Kat's name. So I was like, wait, when did Mira die? What happened?
Mira is very not dead.
Okay, good. All right. I was like, what the fuck? Okay, sorry.
Yes. So then the gang leaves, you know, formation, and they're heading in, and they're talking about not really loving Kat and her friends, because pretty much everybody but the one that Violet befriended blames her for Luella's death. And Kat has just been pulling all kinds of shit. Like, she showed up that morning to Violet's door, knocking in like a translucent robe.
Yeah.
Because Violet shares a room with Zayden, and she was there.
Definitely poking the bear.
Oh, yeah. I'm like, girl, it is only a matter of time before somebody's going to bitch slap the shit out of you.
Throat puncher.
Like, why are you being like this? Like, no man is worth this. Listeners, there is not a single man on the face of the planet who was worth the level of petty bullshit Kat is pulling right now.
Yeah. It's, yeah. Mm-hmm. No.
No.
No. No arguments from me.
Zero. But here she is doing it. But they're all kind of rejoicing in the fact that the griffins have not totally adjusted to the altitude yet, which means the flyers can't pull magic from them. They can't, like, use their signets or whatever, which means they can't mind work on them, so use the mind manipulation magic, which kind of handicaps Kat in her trying to fuck around attempts.
Yeah, just a little bit.
I don't love the whole mind work thing. It's we're probably gonna have to deal with it like a lot in the next book, and I don't wanna.
Yeah, it's looking like that.
Because I have this crazy theory that Kat's very strong abilities in mind work are going to somehow be helpful in dealing with the whole Zayden situation.
Oh, you mean like fixing him to not be Venom?
Or controlling him for a while until they can figure some shit out.
Yeah. That'll be annoying, but it'll probably like happen.
Reduce his urges to pull magic where he's not supposed to.
That's good. Yeah. Good thought.
Just my baseline thought.
That makes sense. Yeah.
So they learn, like, Violet and the crew learn that they have been pulled into some kind of special training the next day. So jump ahead to the next day. And they're all like in this grassy field with their dragons and griffins, and they're just kind of shooting the shit. We learned that Sawyer really wants to learn sign language. She's one of the few people who doesn't know sign language.
Because he wants to talk to Jasenia.
He's got a crush.
He's got a crush. Good for Sawyer. And then we also learn that family members of the writers are starting to arrive. Like Rhee's family had got there the night before. And so she's a little late to the gathering for that. But we also get, we get one of the best lines ever. This has nothing to do with like analyzing of
it. Rack it out. Just, let her loose.
Just, it's just one of the best lines ever. So Andarna is sassy teenager, right? Mm-hmm. She's like, Civil is overrated. I've never tasted Griffin. And then Taryn jumps in. He says, we do not eat our allies. Find another snack. Tell me that's not one of the best lines.
I mean, who wouldn't want to eat the quote ally if it was, you know?
I don't know. They are griffins. They seem annoying. So we also get, you know, a nice little description of Andarna. Okay. This time it says, but there's a reddish sheen to Andarna's scales. I can't help but wonder when that shimmer will turn to a shade more like Taryn's.
I'm sorry. I figured this out so early.
I literally figured it out on the very first time it's mentioned.
Same. She's a special dragon. She's a chameleon.
She's special. Who the fuck knows what they're going to call her?
Yeah, I don't know what they'll call her, but she's special and she can change her color. So.
Yes. So the professor gets there and it's going to be Professor Trissa. And they are going to be learning about runes. And I feel like we get a whole bunch of important lore dump happen in this chapter for stuff that we're not going to necessarily talk about in this book, but I have a very strong feeling are going to come up in future books. So I'm going to read some of Professor Trissa's explanation of runes for us. So they're like, oh, you can't do runes. It's, you know, magic has to be wielded. And she's like, it is wielded. But just like we store food for winter, a wielder can temper a rune using as much or as little power as they choose, then placing it into something like wood or metal or whatever object the wielder chooses. The rune will activate when triggered and perform whatever action it was tempered for. Unlike alloy, which houses power, runes are tempered with power for specific actions. So where have we seen runes? Let's have this conversation. Obviously, Violet's daggers.
Yeah.
We know that Basgaiath is built on runes.
What about it? Didn't they say something about it at Zayden's house?
Yeah, there's runes at Zayden's house because this is a Tirandor Tirish tradition.
Right.
This is something the Tirish mastered. And then after the rebellion and things, before the rebellion and things, but it became out of fashion.
Yeah.
They explained that it kind of got outlawed because the writers are the most powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Runes level the playing field. Because you can counter a lot of signets with runes.
I mean, so makes sense why they would want that information repressed.
Oh, 100%. 100%. Who else has a rune? Brennan has a rune on his hand.
But he's resistant, so that doesn't entirely surprise me.
He's the only one that's described of having a rune on his physical body.
Okay.
I feel like it matters.
It probably does. I don't know why, but it probably does.
She wouldn't have called it out. It wouldn't be there if it didn't matter.
Well, I've said, like, yes, you're probably right, but I gotta be honest with you. Like, there's definitely times where I've said that before and it didn't amount to shit. So,
I mean, there's always a good red herring. And there's also times your friend pushes you down the path of the red herring because you're too good at guessing shit.
It's like a point of pride.
But it ruins the surprise.
No, it doesn't. That's the best part. It's the puzzle. It's my ego. Feeds my ego. I'll be honest.
I only red herring you a little bit.
Yeah, no, you really don't. Let's come back. We can circle back to this.
Okay, we'll circle back to this because we only have like one bullet point left of this chapter.
Yeah.
So she gives them some instructions, which are long and complicated. I'm not going to read them all out, but like definitely go into chapter 45 and read through those instructions again because it's very detailed. I have a feeling some of this shit's going to come back. But the first person to successfully temper something with a rune is Kat, which obviously annoys Violet, but Violet is able to do it.
She just wasn't first.
In the first day. She just wasn't first. So like Violet is finally up against somebody who might be her equal or better.
What do you want to bet these two become friends?
Oh, 100%. Mm-hmm. They're going to become besties.
They're going to become besties.
They're going to tease Zayden about how they both know shit about him.
Yep.
It's going to be Kristen Doty, Ariana Maddox level. Where they hate each other at the beginning.
Yeah.
And then it all works out in the end.
That's actually a wonderful analogy. I like it. I like it a lot.
Look at me pulling our VPR audience into our iron flame.
Not analogy, comparison? Or was it an analogy?
I don't know.
Anyways.
Anyways, that is the end of chapter 45 and the end of this section because very fun other shit goes in and I didn't want this to go too long.
Yeah, no. We would be here for another 2 hours.
We can really talk about these books in obnoxious detail.
Yeah. Speaking of obnoxious detail in books, I am so annoyed. I cannot find something that I am like dying to get through, if that makes sense. I started a series. It was fine. It's really short books, comparatively speaking, to like Throne of Glass or ACOTAR. And I'm just like, ugh, none of these compare. These all suck. They don't actually suck. They're just not as good as the other book.
Yeah.
And I can't find anything that I'm like, yeah, I can't find anything that I like really want to read. I always thought the book hangover was like, oh my God, I need a break. No, I'm trying to find something I'm enjoying that I would like to enjoy as much as that.
It just takes time to find the next thing.
Yeah, I'm struggling. I've fallen back into my old standby genre thrillers.
That's what it's there for.
Yes. But also, I can usually guess the endings. So that's fun.
You do love to guess an ending. Yeah. See, my like go-to thing is romance novels, but I think I might have mentioned this. Other than the fact that Tortured Poets Department has completely taken over all of my downtime listening. I was listening to this free audiobook on Audible called The White Trash Warlock. It's actually really good.
Is it?
Yes.
Okay.
Really good, really fun. It's about this guy. So there's like, it's got an interesting magic system. Like some people have magic, some people don't. And then there's like different levels of magic. And like, if you have magic, you can see like the fairies and the elves and
what time frame things. Is this?
Modern.
Okay. This does sound interesting.
It's very interesting. So he is on the hunt for his estranged father, but then his sister-in-law is also like essentially possessed by a demon that he's trying to figure out how to get the demon out of her without killing her.
Oh yeah, totally.
So it's very, and he's like having, both his brother and his mom are what is called normies, so they don't have any magic. He suspects his brother has a little bit that he doesn't want to own up to because he like likes being a normie. But when he was a teenager, they put him into a mental institution because they couldn't deal with the fact that he had magic.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm probably gonna add that to the TBR.
And there's three books in the series.
Even better.
That I'm aware of so far. And they're not like, they're like nine hour listens. So they're not like super long. But it's actually really, really entertaining.
Interesting. I'm currently reading. I started reading this and I didn't like it initially. And I think it was just because I was like really wanting something different. But it's actually pretty good so far. It's called The Unquiet Bones. It's remains are found, and it's kind of initially a who is it, and then you don't really know who did what yet. Like, there's a group of six kids who are now like retiree age. These bones are connected to them, but I think there's more going on. I think there's a second murder that nobody's figured out yet. I can't tell who did it though. But I'll figure it out.
You will. I'll
figure it out.
If anyone's going to figure it out, it's going to be you. Yes.
Well, maybe not. Sometimes I'm right on the money and sometimes I'm so wrong.
But that's half the fun.
True. Very true.
Half the fun. So any final thoughts about this section of Iron Flame?
No. I'm ready for a bigger chunk of meat for it, I guess.
It's hard because like I don't want to make these episodes like 90 minutes long.
They absolutely could be. So
they could be like, if I went into, because I can't do 46 without then immediately going into 47. You can't go to 47 without immediately going into 48. And it's like six chapters.
Yeah.
But no, the level of conversation we do is too much.
Yes. I'm with you. So with you. So y'all just have to tune in. Next week, then.
Tune in next week. Well, thank you all so much for listening. If you want to check out what is coming up next on the pod, be sure to give us a follow over on Instagram. It's Mel and Jill Geek Out. Or if you have a suggestion of what you think we should be geeking out about next, you can always shoot us an email over at jillandmelgeekout@gmail.com. Once again, my name is Melissa.
And I'm Jill.
And this has been Mel and Jill Geek Out. Bye, guys.
Bye.